So with one out, they are loaded for Bo Bichette. And Bo with a fly ball to right field. Bradley going back. Grand slam! First career big league grand slam for Bo Bichette, and it couldn't have come at a better time.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. It is Wednesday, April 27th, and our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Ben, it is hard to find a bad thing to say about this Blue Jays team right now. It's kind of crazy. They've dealt with injuries to really like core pieces. They've had a bullpen meltdown here and there. They've had games where the starting pitching hasn't been spectacular. They've had games where the offense hasn't been clicking. And through it all, they're finding ways to win, and they're coming out of it in a really good position in terms of wins and losses. Like, it's really been something to watch.
Yeah, it really has. 12-6 as we record this. I mean, that is a great place to be, and it's almost, honestly, it's weird. I just feel like following the Jays over the years, I'm so used to them getting off to these dismal starts where they're, you know, 11-14, they're not playing well, they're injured. I mean, this year they're injured, but they're winning these one-run games. They're putting themselves in an amazing position. It's just way better. I mean, I think that this team, from a talent standpoint, is one of the best teams that I've seen ever for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, it's up there with, you know, you could compare it to the 2015-16 teams. The version of the Blue Jays that we saw at the end of last year was also a very good team. And I think now it's comparable. This team is really talented. They're injured a little bit right now, but they're still winning games. And it's just such a difference because it gives them some breathing room. It gives them a little bit more freedom, maybe even some more room to be patient if, or I should say when, more injuries come up. If they have a little bit of a buffer, that can really help. So they're just off to a great start right here.
Yeah, it does buy them that patience and maybe not the same urgency that they would have and should have had last season when, say, Tyler Chatwood's trying to figure it out, or pick your position player at the plate who's going through something. Like, they can afford a bit more runway now for players who are going through things because they've got these wins in their back pocket, and because they are in such a good position, and because they are so deep and they've had contributions from so many places around the roster, like, they don't have to be quite as jumpy to address certain things. Now, that's not to say that the Blue Jays shouldn't address roster needs and deficiencies and things that come up, and that they shouldn't be urgent, but it's not quite like the same do or die situation that maybe this club found itself in like last May and June.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be in a position where you have to win whatever it was, 13-16 or 15-18 to actually, you know, get back to the race. That's just not the way you want your season to unfold. And there have been times, like last year was one of them. In August, they went on a great stretch. And again, in September, we saw that in 15, obviously, famously at the end of that season. But much better is just winning 2 of 3, winning literally every series they have played so far, except for one tie with the Yankees. Just this consistent version of baseball is way, way better. And, you know, things will come up. Of course, they've still got whatever it is, 145 games, something like that. So, of course, it's still early. They still have tons of work to do. But for where they could be at this point in the season, having played the schedule that they've played, almost all against, you know, competitive teams, they're in a great spot.
No, the deck's been stacked against them, right? 20 games in 20 days, 30-31 to start the season. Like you said, really good opposition. Like, they're not playing Baltimore here. Like, they're playing really good teams. And then you get like a Teoscar Hernandez injury thrown in there, and you get not only a Hyunjin Ryu injury, but a couple starts where Hyunjin Ryu doesn't look at all like himself, and your starting catcher goes down. You know, Kevin Biggio not looking good at the plate and then ends up having COVID. Nate Pearson, a guy who you expected to be maybe a starter for you, maybe a length option out of the bullpen, and certainly one of your highest upside arms, still hasn't left Dunedin. Like, all of these things have been thrown up against the Blue Jays, and they have continued winning through them. Like, does that upgrade your expectations for this season, or are you still sort of thinking, look, we're still in April, there's probably a stretch coming here where the Blue Jays drop 5 of 7 or say they lose back-to-back series. There probably is a stretch where they get a really bad injury that actually does end up hurting them and does end up impacting wins and losses in a real way. Like, do you think this ultimately gets balanced out and you still expect sort of the, I think you had the Jays around 94, 95 wins, or does what's happening now and sort of the money the Blue Jays are putting in the bank now upgrade things for you?
To me, it would be a little bit of an upgrade. I mean, yeah, I think that if I had them around 95 entering the season, I might put them at 96, maybe 97 now. Because like you said, they still have 18 or 19 games against the Orioles. That's a nice thing to have to look forward to. Plus some, you know, AL Central. They haven't seen a lot of, I don't think they've seen any AL Central so far. No. So that's a division that you'll like to face. So yeah, I would boost it a little. I think there's no doubt. I mean, to your point, there will be times where they lose 5 of 7 or 8 of 13. Like, that's going to happen. It's just too long of a season for it not to. But banking these wins is incredible. Like, they haven't, in my opinion, played to the level of a 12-6 team. They probably deserve to be, I don't know, 10-8. But they've banked those wins, you know? So it's way better to be in this position where you're a little bit ahead of it than pointing to run differential and saying, yeah, but, you know, look at our third order wins. You know, how about looking at the actual standings where the Blue Jays are 12-6 and the best team in the American League?
Yeah, we don't have to do the, you know, well, if you look at the difference between Kendrys Morales's actual WOBA and his expected WOBA, you know, this guy is probably going to see some really good results down there. We don't have to do that stuff anymore. Yeah, I think at some point, Kevin Gausman's probably going to walk somebody, like, at some point. Hasn't happened through 4 starts. Pretty incredible. At some point, it's probably going to walk somebody. At some point, the bullpen's going to hit a patch where they're running on fumes a little bit and they've been overused and maybe somebody's carrying something and somebody else is unavailable for whatever reason. And you've got whoever up from AAA who is like all of a sudden being thrown into leverage. Like, there will be points in the season where the depth is tested. In a way, it already has been tested when you consider the fact that Zach Collins is like hitting cleanup regularly. I don't know if you would have put Santiago Espinal into like the depth conversation coming into the season, but in a way he was sort of depth for this team, and he's the everyday second baseman and likely will be going forward. The depth has been tested a little bit to this point. Ross Stripling was depth, right? So there are more tests coming, and we're going to find out if, like, not just that first order of depth, but the second order and third order are going to be up to the task to get the Blue Jays through summer. But I think to this point, if you are the Blue Jays front office, you have to feel really strongly just about the, not just the 26 or 28 man roster that you've built, but the 40 man roster that you've built, and some of the ways that you have insulated against the injuries and the underperformance that you knew were coming before a pitch was ever thrown.
Oh yeah. I mean, sometimes you look at the lineup that the Jays are throwing out there and you know, you've got some Bradley Zimmer, some Ghost Cake Atoh, some Zach Collins.
I know.
You know, if they were losing these games, we'd be sitting down and having a conversation where it's like, all right, but you know, Teoscar's gonna come back and Jansen, and you know, as long as they're, you know, a little bit below 500 coming out of this stretch, that's okay. And truly, that would have been okay if they had emerged from the month of April, you know, a game or two below. Not ideal, but you could work with that. But you know, for Zach Collins to be hitting 3 home runs, for, you know, Cato is doing a nice job in limited playing time. Espinal's been great. I mean, they're, I don't even know where to start with kind of some of these emergent storylines on this team, but to be in a position where you have these guys stepping up, delivering results, you know, there's the question as to how sustainable it is, whether it's sustainable. We'll get to that. We'll find that out in the course of the season. But right now, the results are there and the wins are there.
Ryan Tapia, everyday player. Not something that I saw coming into this season, but yeah, it's, you know, circumstances have dictated it. I mean, what do you think is most real of that group? Like, is it what Tapia is doing? Is it Zach Collins' middle of the order threat? Is it Santiago Espinal and what he's provided early in this season? Like, of those individuals, you could throw Zimmer in there, Cato, who have stepped up and contributed to this team. Like, what do you think is most sustainable from that group?
Yeah, good question. I think to me, it would be the defense we see from Zimmer and Espinal. I think that's real. I think we'll see that all season. And it would be the bat that we're seeing from Zach Collins. I mean, those are the things that jump out to me. Collins, you know, is I think we've both written about, he's a guy who really hit in the minor leagues. And in talking to him last week, you know, he's saying that basically when he was with the White Sox, they were tweaking things, they were working with different approaches, they were trying to get him to, you know, potentially have a different offensive approach at the plate. Just didn't work. He never felt free. The way he looks at it is everyone in the major leagues has a good swing. He's always been a hitter. He's always been a good hitter. And so he's gone back to just trusting his swing, and the results are there. So that's what would stand out to me.
Yeah, it's like people talk about the change of scenery. It's been a change of philosophy for Zach Collins, really, where he got to Toronto and got working with Guillermo Martinez and Dave Hudgens and those guys and Hunter Mentz and all the hitting people. And they basically just said, like, look, let's stop trying to correct things or make you something you're not, or let's just let you be who you are. Like, let's just work with what makes you good. You know, there is a hitch in Zach Collins' swing, and it has been there since he was a little leaguer. Like, it's been there forever, and he's done all kinds of things to try to address it. Like, he's tried mechanically, he'll try to wave the bat over his head, or he'll try to rest it on his shoulder, or he'll try to do all kinds of things. And you know, ultimately, when he comes through to swing the bat, that hitch is just still there and he can't breed it out of himself. So let's work with it, right? Obviously, that's going to put you at a little bit of a disadvantage against velocity and against some spinning stuff. It's a movement inefficiency. That's okay. Let's work around it. Like, let's focus on the things that make you good. And what still hasn't shown up for Zach Collins in the big leagues, and that I think will show up, is the walk rate. Like, he can see pitches really, really well. And in the minors, like, he had really strong walk rates, and we haven't seen that yet in the majors because he's been kind of just barreling the baseball. So that'll work too. But I think there are a good amount of walks coming for him going forward. So while maybe some of the results on balls in play might not be as sustainable for him, like, look, he hits the ball hard, absolutely, but I would imagine, you know, the BABIP will come back around for him a little bit at some point. I think that he can then just kind of transition into, well, okay, now I'm going to get on base in different ways, and now I'm going to take my walks. So I do think that's sustainable. And then, yeah, absolutely, Santiago Espinal is, like, it's been demonstrated in the exit velocities. He's just hitting the ball harder. So you put the ball in play at a high rate of speed, obviously better things are going to happen for you. But it's also the plate approach. Like, he is among the league leaders in pitches per plate appearance. Like, he is nicely blending hitting the ball hard with all not sacrificing contact and still putting the bat on the ball and fouling off tough pitches. Because, like, let's be honest, there are going to be pitchers who are going to overmatch Santiago Espinal. Like, he's not Miguel Cabrera, right? But if he can just be pesky and difficult and foul pitches off and work deep plate appearances, either he can get to a pitch that he can handle, which we've seen a couple of times, or he can just force a pitcher to throw 7, 8, 9 pitches and make a productive out. Like, that is really strong as well. And that approach is something that I think we've seen from a lot of those guys. I know I'm going on here towards the bottom of the lineup, whether it is even Orimel Tapia, who I kind of want to show a little love to here too, has worked some really great plate appearances and fouled a bunch of pitches off and just used that contact approach. Like, I just think the Blue Jays are getting a lot of these hitters outside of their core group to just play to their strengths and do what they do best and contribute in that way instead of trying to be something that they are not. And I think we're seeing the results of that in a really good way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tapia with that at bat late Tuesday, extra inning, sac fly down the left field line. I think it was 8 or 9 pitches to get to that point. You love to see that if you're the Blue Jays. Key spot for them. And Espinal too. I mean, Arash had a great story on the broadcast about a conversation with Teoscar that, you know, Teoscar Hernandez was looking at Espinal and basically saying, look, I want to see you take it the other way. And then Espinal did that. So with Espinal, I think if he hits 265, 270 with a little bit of power, I think you're happy. With Collins, like, I could see him having, you know, offense is really down around baseball this year, and we'll get to that. But, you know, if he has, I don't know what the OPS is, but let's say the OPS plus is 105 for Zach Collins, 5% above league average. I think you're thrilled with that if you're the Jays. And, you know, it really makes up for the absence of Jansen in the short term. And meanwhile, on the defensive side, because, you know, as recently as last week, we're talking about Jansen, the impact that he brings defensively. Well, Alejandro Kirk has stepped up defensively. And at last count, I think there's one wild pitch that has happened with him behind the plate and zero pass balls. and he's doing a good job with the framing. He's really stepped up defensively. So, you know, you are seeing these complementary players or these players, you know, who are slated for part-time roles really stepping up.
Yeah, Kirk's grown a lot as a defender, and I think we should have expected that a little bit, because when he came up in 2020, what, he would have been 21 years old. Like, he was not ready to carry a big league pitching staff as a defensive catcher at that point. You know, he had so little experience just as a professional, right? Like, he just barely had any minor league experience, and he'd gone to the alt site, and they can work on stuff with you at the alt site, certainly, but it's not the same as actual innings in game and actually logging the time that it takes to really improve your craft behind the plate. So Hollander Kirk has had that benefit over the last couple of years, even though he had the injury last season, of just getting that experience and getting those reps, growing more confident. You talk to people with the Blue Jays and they'll tell you, like, he's gone a lot better in pitcher and catcher meetings before games, where it's no longer just like, okay, yes, yes, okay, sure. It's now like, here's what I'm seeing and here's what I think we should do, and here's my opinion on these things. Like, do you notice a little difference there? Like, that is important. Like, that is a guy who's getting more confident and growing into it, because yeah, he's still just 23, right? So we should expect him to continue to be evolving right now, because on a normal trajectory for a traditional catcher coming up in professional baseball, yeah, he'd still be at like AA, AAA. He'd still be on the way up and layering in that experience and growing more confident. He's just done that at the big league level. So it's a credit to him for doing that work, and obviously a credit to John Schneider and everybody with the Blue Jays who's been working with him on it to get him to a place where Danny Jansen goes down unexpectedly just a couple games into the season, and he's able to step into that role. And at a time when, like, offensively, obviously not seeing the results that he wants to, he is able to contribute defensively as a big league catcher and make sure there isn't a huge drop off with Danny Jansen going down.
Right. And I mean, we expect a lot from Kirk offensively because he's done so well. But, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I think he's about a league average hitter right now. And I know there's more in there, but, you know, he's actually kind of holding his own. So to have Kirk and Collins, that's a pretty good offensive combination with Moreno and Jansen potentially coming later in the year. So you're looking offensively at that position at really getting some production. And I wouldn't have been surprised if during this period of time we were seeing pass balls and we were seeing cross ups, as, you know, especially you've got new pitchers. You've got Kevin Gausman. You've got Yusei Kikuchi. These guys are new to the Blue Jays, and it's gone pretty seamlessly, which, you know, I don't think we should take for granted.
Yeah, it's an 80 weighted runs created plus from Alejandro Kirk
okay.
right now. So yeah, it is below average, but I mean, I think we all expect that it's going to be better. And like I said, you know, I mentioned finding ways to contribute even when you're not going your best at the plate. Before that Tapia plate appearance, who was it? It was Alejandro Kirk, who had, like, I don't know that he had the 9-pitch plate appearance Tapia did, but it might have had to be. I mean, he walked and was like 0-2. So it would have had to be like 7. He had a great plate appearance in front of Tapia as well. And Tapia also fell behind 0-2 and found a way to fight back into that thing. And I mean, talk about two guys who have really good bat to ball skills. I mean, those are two dudes who are like pretty tough to put away in 0-2 counts, because they can just get their bat to a lot of things around the zone. It's kind of like a sneaky thing the Blue Jays have layered into their lineup this year, because at the top, look, you have aggression, right? Like George Springer, aggressive. Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Teoscar Hernandez when he's healthy, aggressive hitters, but guys who will swing and miss, right? And guys who will strike out a bit. Towards the bottom, you've got this interesting sort of like contact area of the yeah. of the order, where it is like an Espinal, and it is you know, even like Ghost K Kato when he's in there, right? Like guys are going to put the bat on the ball and work deep plate appearances and not have quite as much swing and miss. Like, as a pitcher and you're facing this lineup, like, it's tough to breathe. Like, this lineup is kind of all over you from 1 till 9.
100%. And then it turns over from that bottom of the order and you get George Springer. And, you know, Springer, I just feel like we didn't see this full version of Springer last year. And right now he looks like an MVP candidate. He looks like just a very, very strong player on both sides of the ball with that home run. I think all four of his home runs have either tied the game or given the Blue Jays the lead.
2-1. And a drive to center. Well hit. Gone! George Springer has tied the game in the bottom of the ninth.
You know, that's a great place to be early on. Diving catch in the outfield on Monday night. Great play in left center field. So you're just seeing the full George Springer experience. And, you know, sometimes I think, you know, people with the Blue Jays hold their breath because you don't want him to run into a wall or something and miss 2 weeks or miss longer. But the results are undeniable. This guy's having the kind of season that he wanted to have last year and the kind of season that they're paying him $25 million a year for.
He comes up so big in big spots, and it's every part of my logical brain is like resisting the like, oh, he's clutch and he's like, oh, whatever, right? Like, to every part of me is like fighting against that. But I just keep seeing it again and again in big moments when like the Blue Jays are down by a couple or the game is tied. In big moments, this guy just comes through consistently, it seems. I haven't, you know, dove into the numbers, but at a certain point, I'm going to have to just stop fighting that feeling and be like, yeah, George Springer is just like a big moment, big game player.
I agree. I mean, I think World Series MVP, that demonstrates that he can do it. And of course, like, you know, there will come a point where George Springer's clutchness will still be there, but his baseball talents won't be, you know, 10 years down the road or whatever the case. Yeah. So, you know, clutch only gets you so far. But I think now that he has his abilities at peak level, I think he is clutch. I believe that. And I think some players are clutch. And I think Springer's one of them. And I think we're seeing that at a time that his abilities are right there, right where the Blue Jays want them, with his legs, with his, you know, decisions at the plate. Obviously, the power is there. And he's looking like an impact player. And I mean, you know, that's what you need. They, right now, the Jays kind of have two of three there with Bo, Vlad, and Springer. Bo, you know, huge grand slam, but still not quite there. But, you know, Vladdy, after making an adjustment at the plate, and deciding to make pitchers attack him, because they weren't for the first 10 days of the season, they were not attacking him. And then he said, fine, I'll take my walks. I will make you guys pitch to the other hitters around me and I'll take my walks. And now we're seeing great results there as well.
I know, I was going to write about it in Houston and I didn't, because just things got carried away. But I actually went and pulled the Savant data, and there is a cutoff. I think it was April 16th or 17th, where like before that, and I plotted it. You could see like he was expanding. You could see all the swing and miss. You could even see the pitches outside the zone that he was fouling off or like putting in play. Like you could see how much he was swinging the stuff outside the zone. And there literally was just a delineation, just a day where he decided, I'm not going to do that anymore. And everything afterwards, which I had plotted on another pitch chart on the right, was like, I just don't swing at pitches outside the zone anymore. The fact that he just flipped that switch, that's insane against the best pitching on the planet, that he was able to just make that decision and not do it anymore is mind boggling.
It's unbelievable. I think I was there for that moment, because I think it was in Boston, and I was talking to Guillermo Martinez, the Jays hitting coach, before one of those games. This might've been a leading question, but I was basically saying they're scared of him. They're scared of him. They're not pitching to him. And he was saying, yeah, they're scared of him. And, you know, pitchers are not stupid was one of his lines. Pitchers are not dumb. They know who this is. They know he's the best hitter in the world. So they're avoiding him. And so if they're going to avoid him, just take the walks, because, you know, you look at Miguel Cabrera or Albert Pujols or these hitters that Vladdy wants to get to that level. He's not there, but he wants to get to that level. Then those guys over time, they take their walks. And I think that, you know, if Vladdy continues this, then he'll be on that trajectory.
You have to. There's no other option. And sometimes they will literally force you to take your walks, and that you will be intentionally walked. Like Vlad will probably end up with like 18 to 20 intentional walks this year, I would assume, just because he's becoming that kind of guy. But yeah, pitchers aren't dumb. Pitchers saw Gerrit Cole throw 98 6 inches inside the plate and Vlad just like flick it 427 feet into the night at Yankee Stadium. Like pitchers saw that. If you're taking that ball out, they're not gonna throw you a pitch right over the heart of the plate. They're gonna, you know, it's still Zach Collins behind you. They're still gonna think, all right, I'll take my chances with him rather than, you know, this otherworldly unicorn of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So it's similar to the Kirk thing, right? Like Vlad's still so young, like he's still learning those things at the big league level, and it's still, I think, an approach situation where he has to be that disciplined and he has to deal with that internal frustration of like, I want to hit, I want to put the ball in play. I want to run around the bases like a madman. I want to, you know, barrel baseballs off of walls. Like, that's what he wants to do. Hitting got him to the big leagues. Like, hitting is his life. Like, it's his identity in a lot of ways. And he just has to compartmentalize and process that and take his walks and sometimes have plate appearances where he doesn't even swing the bat and know that by doing that, that'll allow him to hit and do what he loves in the future.
And it's working. I mean, you look at the results, they're there. They're incredible, just where the Blue Jays would want them, even as he's making those adjustments on the fly. And, you know, you mentioned his base running. And I just think it's interesting. Vladdy has been really good base running wise. His defense has improved. And I think in a way, it's emblematic of the team. You know, what we're seeing overall, they are a better base running team than we've seen in recent years, and they're a better fielding team. And those things do add up. I think that those help as they, you know, they play one close game after another. And even, you know, I don't know if you saw the play where it was the Tigers blowing a late lead to the Twins. It's like a little league play, and, you know, the ball's flying all over the place, and Eric Haas threw it, and the Twins scored two runs to defeat the Tigers. And I was thinking, that's the kind of play that we saw maybe from the Blue Jays a couple years ago, and we're not seeing it now. They are playing very crisp defense, and it's helping them on the margins, and it's helping them win those close games.
Yeah, you know, there's been a few things that have gone into that, right? Like, we've seen the daily, and we've talked about it, I know, on the podcast before, so I won't bore people anymore with it, but like the daily defensive routines and the focus on that for infielders especially, but outfielders as well. I think that's been huge for the defense. And I think with the base running, a big thing is the Blue Jays are being a lot more accountable this year with regards to effort on the base pass and with regards to making good decisions. Every day, after every game, Blue Jays position players are receiving reports on their effort and on what they did on the base pass. And did you get a good read? Did you get a good jump? Like, on each specific like in-game event, and they're getting green pluses and red minuses, right? And pluses when they make good decisions, or they get good secondary leads, or they, you know, run hard back to a base, or run hard out of the box on a routine play, get up the first base line. Bo Bichette in Houston had one where he's on first, and it was a liner up the middle from Vlad. And Bo's on first, and the liner up the middle gets ticked off the infielder's glove. And Bo gets a good secondary, makes a good read on the ball that ticked off the infielder's glove, and ran hard, good turnaround second, got to third. First to third on a play that, for a lot of guys that get caught in between, they aren't sure, is it going to be caught? What's going to happen? Maybe they only end up at second. Bo got to third on that. And by the way, after that, then scored on a sacrifice fly to the second baseman when he, again, made a good read. This ball is going to be caught, but the second baseman is moving backwards towards the outfield, and he actually ended up colliding with the shortstop. But Bo was going to go anyways because the second baseman's moving backwards towards the outfield. Back turn, not going to be in a good position to throw to home. Bo retreated to third, ran hard through home, scored on a sacrifice fly. Second baseman, that was another green plus. Like, this is feedback that Blue Jays position players are getting every day after every game. And I think that is contributing to the better base running, the better decisions that we're seeing, because they're being held accountable for that. So we're seeing the results, obviously, with the defense, with the base running, as you said. And I think that those things I just mentioned, that's the process that is behind the results and that is yielding those returns.
For sure. Yeah. And, you know, it adds up to just some really compelling baseball. You know, it's been really entertaining. Whether it was, you know,
you can't look away from this team, man.
You can't.
It's crazy.
You can't. No, you really can't. Like, there was the 4-hour game that ended with the Tapia sack fly, and the night before there was like a 2-hour game that was incredible. I mean, they'll sign up for those any day. It was so crisply played. It's been good. It's been a lot of fun to watch this team.
No, this is like no BS. Like, this, the team has been really interesting to watch.
Yeah,
every game is compelling. There's no blowouts in either direction. There's no games where they're like out of it in the fourth inning. You're just getting through it. There's no games where they're like up by 10 in the third and it's just a laugher. Every game is like the margin is 0-3 runs going into the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. And whether the Blue Jays are ahead or behind, like, there is serious like question as to what the result of the game is going to be right through to the finish as a fan. What more can you ask for? This team is just riveting to watch on a nightly basis.
Yeah, check the records. I mean, I guarantee that me and Arden were not saying this in 2019 when Clay Buchholz and Billy McKinney and Brandon Drury were on the... I guarantee. Check it. Like, we were not saying that. This team is different and it's very entertaining.
Absolutely. Let's step away. But when we come back, we're going to talk about maybe offense across baseball on a more global scale. And then we'll take a look at a couple other news and notes around the Blue Jays as we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And it is time now for Keeping It Light, brought to you by Miller Lite. Ben, just pulling out from the Blue Jays a little bit, taking a little bit more of a global perspective. Offense and MLB this year is down to like a pretty staggering degree. Just pull it up here right now. So the league average, batting average this year across baseball, 231. That's the MLB batting average this year. Literally the lowest in the history of the game. If this held up, it would be the lowest league-wide batting average ever in baseball history. The next lowest is 237 in 1968. 1968, literally known as the year of the pitcher. And the following year, they lowered the mound and adjusted the strike zone because they were like, whoa, where's all the offense right now? We need to change the actual game in order to get more offense. This year's batting average is 6 points lower so far. I mean, in the dead ball era, you saw batting averages in like the high 230s, right? And we're at 231. Right now, what do you make of it? Small sample, noisiness, something that'll improve as the year goes on, just a reality of the era we're in. Does baseball need to do something? I mean, what do you take away from this this low offensive output to this point?
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. I mean, to me, partly it's, you know, always in the month of April, you're going to see lower offensive outputs. That's the case this year. That's not a surprise. When the weather gets warmer, we will see offense go up. I mean, that's a fact. It always happens. The humidors that are now in every park, that's a factor here. So I do think that that's different compared to last year and probably will continue impacting things. Pitching is really good. We have big rosters right now. So that means that there are a lot of pitchers and managers can churn through. They have fresh arms right now. So that impacts things as well, potentially. I don't know. Like when I see 231, it's too low to me. I think that, you know, if I could pick the number, I'd want the major league average to be 260 or 265. I think the game is better when you have more hits, when you have more balls in play. Like it's pretty rare to go to a game and say, you know, I really wish there had been fewer hits. I think hits are good. Home runs are good. That's part of the fun of baseball. So yeah. I do think, you know, some changes are needed. I wonder about a pitch clock. I think a pitch clock could accomplish a couple of things. I don't know if you see any other reasons for why this is the case, but one way or another, to me, it needs to change.
Yeah, I think there's all those reasons apply. And then I think there are a few unique things that have sort of been happening slowly over the last several years, right? You think about how hyper-specialized scouting is these days and strategy is, the amount of video and information and data in the game. I mean, teams are just so much better prepared to attack hitters. Now they know their tendencies better than ever before, where the holes in their swings are better than ever before. The positioning defensively is more optimized than it's ever been. The Toronto Blue Jays are shifting more than any team in baseball by a significant margin. I mean, we've seen more shifts this year than we ever have before, and MLB might come down with a ruling on shifts going forward. It sounds like they're going to, at least. I don't love it because I just feel like it's anti-competitive, but I also feel like it's something that's inevitable, is that we'll have some sort of a restriction on shifts going forward. But for now, like, we are seeing really aggressive shifting in the game. So like that, a lot of those ground balls that used to get through, that used to raise batting averages, have gone away or going into shifts. And part of the counter to that from hitters is more of a like three true outcomes approach, right? More of get the ball up, try to drive it, try to hit it into the seats. And you're doing that against the hardest fastball velocity that we've ever seen in MLB and the spinniest breaking stuff, like the nastiest off speed and secondary stuff that we've ever seen. And we're actually in an era right now where like fastball velocities are as high as they've ever been and fastball usage is actually as low as it's ever been. You're seeing way more off speed stuff being thrown. So like, I just think that like life as a hitter has gotten so difficult at the big league level. It really puts into context like how special Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is, that he's able to thrive in this era, that he's able to do what he's doing in this environment. But I do think that those sort of unique aspects that we've seen coming into the game that we've been recognizing over the last couple of years have just taken another step now, where I don't know that things getting warmer throughout the season or changing the baseball or putting the baseball in or out of a humidor is going to impact it as much, because I do think there are some very specific things happening in the game right now that are producing these results.
Yeah, you know, Vlad, incredible. Xander Bogaerts, another exception to this. Like, he's so good. Watching him a lot in the last week, just incredible bat-to-ball skills for Bogaerts. But yeah, by and large, hitters can't combat it. They're up against it. And it's tough to see. I think the product is still really good. I've really found baseball to be really compelling this year, as I always do. But I think that the product is good. We just got to make some tweaks there, you know, to make sure that there are more of those balls in play, more of those hits. I agree with you. We don't want to limit the shift. I really have enjoyed actually seeing the Jays with their four-man outfield. I think that's been really effective so far. And I like seeing that. But there's got to be some measures in place to allow hitters to get more hits.
And just to zoom back in on the Blue Jays, then, you think about this offense, and we've been watching it very closely, obviously, and it feels like it's not firing on all cylinders, right? Like, it feels like it's not quite clicking. It hasn't quite been the offense that was advertised coming in. It feels like it'll get better. I don't disagree with anyone who says, yeah, the Blue Jays offense has looked like it's been scuffling at points throughout this year. And yeah, Matt Chapman hasn't quite been Matt Chapman yet. And obviously, Bo Bichette's been going through it a little bit. And like, Alejandro Kirk hasn't been himself, et cetera, et cetera. It's still a well above average offense in MLB. Like, in the context of what's happening globally, like, the Blue Jays as an offense have a 113 weighted runs created plus. So like, weighted runs created plus factors in ballpark, factors in era. So factors in like what's happening league-wide right now. The Blue Jays are 13% better than league average offensively. They're a top 10 offense in the AL. They're top five. It won't feel like that if you were just watching the Blue Jays every night and just seeing the offensive performances that are coming from them. Like, we're not seeing these like 6, 7, 8 run outbursts. But in the context of MLB globally, Blue Jays are a really good offense this year.
Yeah, it's really important to note that, because, you know, certainly for me, I'm watching basically 162 Jays games, and I try to watch as much other baseball as I can. But, you know, certainly in the East Coast time frame, that's the game you're watching. And so you of course, you get these Blue Jays colored glasses on, and that's the lens through which you see absolutely everything in baseball. Probably true for most, if not all, of our listeners as well. But yeah, it's important to zoom out and say, look, they are actually having a good offensive year.
A lot of pitchers looking good across the league this year, but regardless of what was happening offensively, I think Kevin Gausman was going to look really good, because he has just arrived at the beginning of the season with his best stuff. Like, his splitter is on, his fastball is hard, his location is there. Maybe in his first outing, he wasn't quite able to like elevate the fastball the way he would like to, but he has been lately. Fastball's up, splitters are down. When he's mixing in like the breaking ball and the changeup, good luck. Like, just look at some of the looks on the faces of Red Sox hitters on Tuesday, April the 26th, which is when he faced them the second time. He had like 19 swinging strikes in back-to-back outings against the Red Sox, like 19 in each, not combined, in each. Crazy. And just the looks on the faces of Red Sox hitters who were like getting beat by fastballs over the heart of the plate because they were just like so in between, so confused and lost as to what was going to be thrown at them and as to how to even execute their approach. Kevin Gausman is just like doing, no joke, like Roy Halladay stuff right now with the Blue Jays. Like, he is on that level of like really strong pitching in a Blue Jays uniform. It's been cool to watch.
Yeah, it's just to your point about the looks on the Red Sox faces, it's basically a combination of confusion and defeat, like utter defeat. You know, yeah. It's like they're really taken aback by how good his stuff is. And he puts it where he wants. It's great stuff. You know, as you said in the first half, he hasn't walked someone yet. So the results are incredible. He's got all kinds of strikeouts. It's really a dream performance. You know, and remember too, the Red Sox are a good offense. He was facing them twice in a row, in which case usually it becomes a bit more of an advantage to the hitters. They're that much more familiar with his stuff and his release point. And yet he was very effective in both outings. So, you know, incredible start to his Blue Jays career. And it's, you know, it's just worth noting that he was brought in to replace the Cy Young Award winner. Like, we don't really talk about that often, but Robbie Ray won the Cy Young. Kevin Gausman signed, you know, in the same week for the same money, give or take. That's who he's replacing. And he has not missed a beat. He has been every bit as effective as Robbie Ray was last year when he won the Cy Young. And that's just, it's a huge reason that the Blue Jays are where they are.
88th percentile whiff rate, 100th percentile, so literally best in baseball chase rate. He is getting swing and miss in the zone, and he is getting guys to chase outside. Like, it's the perfect dream combination. And is Kevin Gausman going to be like this elite all season long? Likely not. Like, this pace is unsustainable, but it is exactly what the Blue Jays were signing up for when they brought him in. Like, credit to him that, like, I don't know if I want to call it late in his career. Like, he's 31, but man, he's been around for a long time. Like, he just keeps raising his own bar. Like, he just does keep getting better. It's similar to what I was talking about earlier about how, you know, MLB starters are just like throwing their heaters less often and relying more on secondary stuff. Like, he's been a guy who throughout his career, fastball percentage has just progressively gone down and the secondary percentage has gone up, and it's really worked for him. It helps to be throwing a splitter that is legitimately one of the best singular pitches in baseball. I would imagine, like, to this point in the season, it probably has been the most effective pitch in baseball to this point, but like, it is an absolutely devastating weapon. And when played off of his fastball up in the zone, like, yeah, you're going to get the looks the Red Sox hitters were giving you. But if you layer in swing and a miss on the plate, chase off of it without walking anybody, like, yeah, you're in the realm of, if you do that consistently, you're going to be going 7, 8, 9 innings. You're going to be like flirting with no hitters. Like, that is the type of like upper echelon elite stuff that produces incredible results at the highest level.
Efficient too. I mean, the game in Boston, like, I think he went through that entire game without throwing more than 15 pitches in any individual inning. And then at the very end of it, he's out there in the ninth inning. And it's just such a rarity in today's game. And he didn't complete it. But man, it's really cool as a fan of the game to see a starting pitcher out there in the ninth inning. And I don't know, I don't think it'll be the last time that we see Gausman pushing for a complete game. And I hope that, you know, it's a rarity. You don't see a lot of them. But I hope that we do get to witness one or two of those this year.
No, I don't say this lightly. Like, he could throw a perfect game. Honestly, like, if you're not walking anybody and you are getting whiffs at this rate and your stuff is this elite, and when it is put in play, it's like weak on the ground or a routine fly ball, like, that is like perfect game recipe.
Good defense behind him. If he does it, you heard it here first.
Seriously. And yeah, like you said, efficient, working quickly. He, like, so with the pitch calm especially, he's ready to go. Like, it is, you kind of saw Vasquez messing with him a little bit on Tuesday, right? Calling time a couple of times, stepping out, taking his time, getting back in the box after foul balls. Like, the Red Sox are trying to disrupt that rhythm because Kevin Gausman wants to work quickly, which is another thing, like, aesthetically, just watching him is like just such a joy when a guy is just literally, and he's just standing on the mound, staring in, like, dead eye, cold stare, ready to go. And with the pitch calm, it even speeds it up a little bit where, like, Zach Collins is just giving him the pitch and those guys were on the same page where he's just like, he's ready to go as soon as he gets the ball back. You love to see it. At the other end of that spectrum, Yusei Kikuchi, not working super quick, not looking super confident on the mound, sort of timid with his fastball, which is so weird because it's like 95, 96, sometimes 97 from the left side. Major league starters don't throw fastballs that hard, and big league starters don't have his kind of stuff. And you knew coming into this year, it was going to be a project and it was going to be something that was going to be a work in progress as things go on. What have you made of the beginning of that project? Because it's almost even been hard to analyze the results and hard to figure out what's going on there, because I think even internally the Blue Jays have just been a little bit puzzled with the way Yusei Kikuchi has pitched on the mound, the way he's strayed from his game plan, the way things have worked for him, and he hasn't gone back to those things that have been working. It is, like, in a weird way, very fascinating, but I'm sure for the Blue Jays, quite frustrating as well.
Yeah, results-wise, I mean, pretty obvious. Very disappointing, very underwhelming, bad results. He's walking too many guys, getting hit hard, not staying in games long. Yeah, so that's the easy part. Then it's like, you know, what happens from here? And he is working with, like you said, the velocity's there. To me, like, you know, far from being a pitching coach, but, you know, here we are talking about the Jays. You look at the cutter usage, and it's like he's throwing this cutter so much. And, you know, he's got this fastball that's really good. The cutter's more like 91, and sometimes it doesn't cut. And so armchair manager right here, armchair pitching coach, but maybe throw the fastball more on the cutter less and see if that works out.
It's a thought. No, that's an idea.
Yeah.
Certainly, right? Yeah. And maybe for the out pitch, less of the cutter and more of the slider, right?
Right.
And more of the split change to righties. And look, change up ultimate feel pitch. Sometimes, like, you're not going to have your feel for it. But I think the slider could be more of a weapon for Kikuchi if you would, you know, use it a bit more, because it's really not even a slider, it's a curveball. Like, you look at the way it moves, like, it moves down a lot more than it vertically, a lot more than it moves horizontally. I guess it's kind of slurvish, but I think it's a weapon for him against both sides of the platoon. And I think if he's tunneling it effectively off of his fastball, which again is 95-96 from the left side, and his high spin, so it gets on hitters at a high rate and doesn't drop as much as they're expecting it to. Like, I think the building blocks are there. Like, that's part of why it is so fascinating slash frustrating, is because, like, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's like 91, 92 with like okay secondaries. Like, we're talking about a guy with real velocity and real movement and spin on his secondary stuff. So, like, there are building blocks here. Like, you can see it. You can see what the Blue Jays saw. Like, if we just get this guy on a better game plan and we, you know, make some tweaks and some adjustments with him and get him doing things differently, yeah, the results could be exceptional. And we've seen it before. Yusei Kikuchi was an all-star just last season because his first half was that strong. It's just been sort of bizarre watching him try to put it together on a big league mound this year and not having the success that, you know, we believe he could be having.
100%. And it's obviously, you know, frustrating to him. You know, you can tell in these outings, it's not the way he wants it to be going either, of course. And so this is one of those cases where it's just, you have that separation between what has happened and, you know, moving forward, and what has happened has not been good. And then moving forward, you want him on your team. You still look at the stuff, you still look at the potential and the track record, and you think there are many reasons to believe that he will be an effective starter for this team. So then it's a question of, how do you get there? How soon can that happen? What adjustments have to be made for that to happen? And that's what him and Pete Walker and, you know, the catchers on this team, the analytics department, I guarantee they are all looking at that, because Kikuchi, he's an important starter. Just, you know, right now they have three other guys clicking in Gausman, Berríos, and Manoah. But you need Kikuchi at some point to join that group. And the sooner that happens, the better for the Jays.
Yeah. It's just another example, though, of, like, even when things aren't the greatest with the Blue Jays, like, they are compelling and interesting, right? Like, it's everything about this team has just been so, it's my biggest point this week. It's just been so interesting and compelling. Like, these April games feel like September. Like, they really, like, being there, and I know you know this being there as well, but for anybody who hasn't been out to the park yet, or anybody who hasn't been as close to the team as we have been, it feels like a playoff run right now, which is sort of crazy because it's not May yet. And it's the feel, not just like in the ballpark, it's around the team, it's the dugout, it's the, like, the focus and the attention and the drive, the commitment every day. It's the way these guys are working, like, it's the way that they're celebrating and responding to one another. It's the culture, it's the environment, it's all those buzzwords that everybody rolls their eyes at, but I think that are very real and really starting to present themselves this season. Like, it's just, it feels like the stretch run in April. So I don't know what that says about what May or June or July, the dog days are going to feel like. But right now, like, just as somebody who works in baseball, who covers this team, I am loving the atmosphere and the intensity and just the nature of these games every night.
And the players are having a lot of fun. I mean, you can tell. Like, it, nothing against, you know, any other previous version or iteration of this team. But, you know, I just can't imagine seeing Jose Bautista and Josh Donaldson doing OK Blue Jays the way George Springer and Vlad Jr. were in the dugout. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did it. There's a clip out there of them doing it. But, like, these guys are having a lot of fun. And, you know, they might, you know, make it to the World Series this year and lose. And then, you know, it could happen 2 years in a row, and then the vibe could change, and you never know. But right now, they're just on the rise. Like, they're this team on the rise. They know they're good. They're winning games with their stars and with their complementary players, and they're having so much fun. It's really obvious how much this team is enjoying playing baseball.
Yeah, think about where we were last April 27th, Ben. The club was in Dunedin playing out a minor league ballpark, right? The games that they're winning now by a run or two, they were losing. They were on the wrong side of same injury stuff going on, but we weren't seeing the resiliency to get through it. Look at where literally you and I were staring at Zooms from home rather than being at Fenway Park, being at Minute Maid Park, being around the club, in the clubhouse, like doing our jobs the way we should be doing them. So all of that plays into this as well. Having fans back in the stands and having the Rogers Center be electric again. I mean, it is like quite a reversal from where we were just 12 months ago.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I had a moment last week where I was the first one down there. So I was walking into the clubhouse at Fenway Park, and you know that clubhouse, how tiny it is, right? It's like the size of half a tennis court or something, or a suburban pool. Like, it's really, really tiny. And it was weird almost to be walking back in there into a visiting clubhouse after a few years away. Cause I'm like, you're just like walking right into it. You just open the door and there you are and life goes on. But it's like, whoa. Yeah. This is a lot different than Zoom.
Yeah. No kidding. Looking forward to where it goes from here. Cause it's been super interesting thus far. That's going to be it for us this week, but do want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, as always, Amal Delich, for overseeing everything. Want to remind you that you can send us an email if you've got some feedback or a question or a note, whatever you got. It's @theletters@sportsnet.ca. That's going to be it for us, but thank you for listening. For Ben, I'm Arden. This has been At The Letters.